Jovan Buha! Buha!
Yo, yo! I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block, and welcome to another live show. On today's episode, I want to talk through Cameron Carr's introductory press conference. I was there earlier today, and he spoke to the media for about 10 minutes. So I want to go through what we learned and my thoughts on that. Then I want to get into free agent bargains. We've been focusing on the Lakers center pursuit and the wing pursuit, but that's been in a starting context. That's been trying to find long-term fits around Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves, guys that the Lakers can either sign with their cap space or potentially trade for. But I think the Lakers are going to need to hit on some of these back-end roster guys. This has been a weakness for LA for quite some time. I've talked about this multiple times before, but if you look at LA's 10 through 15 spots on the roster over the past half decade, that has been a real weakness for the front office in terms of identifying some of these minimum guys or even some of the younger guys that they have tested out in terms of two ways or second round picks, whatever. So this is an area LA is going to have to improve on this season. JJ Redick talked about it at exit interviews coming out of the season. So I think this is going to be a real point of emphasis for them. And I think they're going to need to depart from their typical try to be like the second or third home for a former lottery pick. Now, there are a couple of former lottery picks on this list, so I will be, breaking that rule a little bit here. But for the most part, I am looking at guys that were either undrafted or second round picks or have bounced around multiple places for a variety of reasons, but guys that don't necessarily fit the traditional mold of the typical Lakers signing, the typical Lakers minimum signing. So I think they need to be focusing on guys with specific skill sets and guys who check multiple boxes, which I will be talking through. But we did have some breaking news right before the show. Isaiah Hartenstein, the Thunder are declining his team option for $28 million. And he's going to be re-signing on a three-year, $75 million deal with them. So Isaiah Hartenstein is officially off the board. We talked about it last night with Kobe Price. It was unlikely that he ever hit unrestricted free agency because OKC was in control with that team option. And the only way he was going to be an unrestricted free agent was if they declined that, which it made zero sense to decline that and let him test the market. So figured the only way he would technically have that option declined would be if it was a situation where he was re-signing. So, maybe there could have been a scenario in which OKC just looked at their cap situation. They're still $18.8 million above the second apron. And they're like, hey, we just drafted Mara. We have several centers on the roster. Iheart's a little too expensive. Let's move on and just save some money. But instead, they are getting a slight discount with him, saving that $3 million or so. Probably end up declining the team option on Kenrich Williams, and then also have a decision to make with Lu Dort. And of course, earlier today, they flipped Isaiah Joe to the Pistons for 2 second-round picks. Teams keep helping OKC facilitate. I mean, that's honestly shows, I think that's a testament to OKC's front office, where like they're trying to salary dump and they are still getting assets for the salary dumps because they have good players on good contracts. And that's where like having that depth at the back end of your roster, like the Lakers are in a similar position with Jared Vanderbilt, where they would love to salary dump him, but they're not getting 2 second-round picks for Jared Vanderbilt. If they dump him, they're going to have to be giving up the equivalent of, I think, a minimum of like 2 second-round picks, but the Lakers don't even have 2 second-round picks to trade. So that's where they probably have to give up something around like a first round pick. So yeah, I mean, that OKC, we'll see how they reshape things if Dort becomes available or not. But that was the breaking news before we started. So in terms of Cameron Carr's introductory press conference, it happened at 2:30 Pacific time today. I spoke to the media for about 10 minutes. I was in the building, and I will say I came away very impressed with Cameron Carr's just awareness and perspective. And I mean, I would say this is the most impressive like rookie press conference I can remember, probably dating back to Max Christie, and just his breakdown of his own game. And, so I asked him, for those who aren't familiar with his game or just know his game a little bit, what would you say? And he kept that answer pretty short. He said, I'm explosive, I'm dominant, and I love to dunk the ball and block shots. So that is a little peek into his game. But then as he talked about it more through different questions, he talked about playing off of the ball more and how in high school, he came up with one of the top high school point guards in the country. So he was used to playing off of the ball and that he thinks that's a strength in his game and playing off of Luka and Austin and potentially LeBron, that he's like, my job's easy. I just have to continually move. I have to cut. I have to dunk and finish at the rim. I have to make open threes. I have to get out and transition. And I just thought his perspective was refreshing. I thought a lot of his answers were the type of answers that you wanted to hear. And again, that's not always how these things go. Sometimes it's a little awkward. Sometimes the guy has an outsized view of themselves, or it's just not congruent with what the team is looking for. And certainly, I think as time has passed, like, players have become more media trained, and players nowadays are more media trained than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever. But you know, there was an element of that, right? Like, clearly he is media trained to some degree, but I thought I liked a lot of his answers. And I think one thing that really stood out was just how excited he is through this process. And he opened up the presser by thanking everybody, like, for the opportunity to just be there, like, talk to him and just about the history of the Lakers franchise, and walking through the practice facility and seeing the photos and the jerseys in the rafters, and just seeing all the history with the franchise, and just being in the NBA for arguably the most historic franchise in the NBA. Like, it, you could just tell there was a genuine, that there was almost like a puppy dog nature to him. But again, in terms of the act, like, there's going to be stuff where they talk about, like, I don't get as much into like the psychological side necessarily. I focus more on the basketball answers. And from the basketball perspective, again, it was talking about playing off of the stars, understanding that he's going to be an off-ball player, and also talking about his defense. He mentioned that he was asked about like what he thinks he has to do from day one to get on the floor, and if he's willing to adapt his game. And he immediately said, I know I have to step up on defense. I need to defend at a higher level, and I want to be the best defender on the team. And it's a long shot that he will be based on where he's at currently defensively compared to like a guy like Marcus Smart or something. But that's the type of attitude you do want to hear, the type of perspective, the type of outlook you want from a rookie. So I just thought he came off as the right mix of hungry and also with a level of self-awareness that I felt what was refreshing. But he also talked about living in the weight room. He said that, like, it was like, what was the what's the primary thing you're looking to work on this summer? What's the thing you know you need to address? Immediately said strength and weight and putting on mass and being in the gym every single day. And he said the weight room is going to be his second home. So that's another thing where at just 184 pounds, he's got the physical tools, he's got the vertical leap, he's got the long arms, but he clearly needs to gain 10 to 15 pounds for that size, and also maintain that athleticism, which that can be tricky to do, right? You see guys sometimes bulk up and then they're not as quick, not as explosive, can't jump as high. Maybe that even leads to injuries. So it's going to be a process. It's going to be, you don't want him to gain the 15 pounds in like a month, because that could lead to a potential injury. It's got to be, I think, a multi-month process leading into October, and we'll see where his body is at that point. But again, I just thought guys don't always answer questions the right way. Guys aren't always as self-aware as I thought he came off. And I thought, like, I just think that especially with how some of the recent picks have gone for the Lakers, I at least thought he won the press conference, which only matters so much. You actually have to go out and perform and deliver, and he's got to go out and have a nice summer league, and he's got to build off that, build up his body, go into training camp, go into the preseason, and continue to improve, right? So none of this really matters. Like, if he's great in front of a microphone, it does not necessarily translate to on the floor, but we're not at that stage yet. We will judge him once he gets the summer league. We'll judge him in the training camp and preseason and whatnot. But for now, at least, I thought he had a solid press conference where I just liked most of his answers and his perspective. Of note, Rob Pelinka did not speak to the media. So Rob was supposed to speak on draft night, and because the trade was not official, he did not speak. Then he was supposed to speak the next day to beat reporters, and that got pushed back, and then he did not speak today. So we have not heard from him. I don't know if every executive has spoken. I know a lot of executives have spoken post-draft. So that is, I don't know the next time he'll speak. I assume it's going to be post-free agency. So we won't get some update. I mean, I don't think he was going to give us insight into, like, are the Lakers operating above the cap or under the cap? And he's already given, you know, some perspective and quotes in the press release on drafting Cameron Carr. But it would have been nice to be able to ask a little bit about where the group's at with LeBron and where they're at with free agency. And I don't know what answers we would have gotten, but that clearly was not in the cards today. And that was pretty much it. I mean, it was a quick press conference, probably, I would guess, you know, 10, 12 questions or so. And most of the stuff was straightforward. And, you know, I took a bunch of notes, but I pretty much hit on everything. So I think it's now time to get into the free agent bargains. The Lakers need to nail the back end of the roster, and we can focus on the cap space route or the over the cap route. And either way, they're going to need to find some minimum level guys or some guys making in the single digit millions that fit with what they're trying to do. So in terms of what I think the Lakers should be looking for in bargain free agents or guys that to me are making under $10 million, all these guys, I think, are projected to make under $10 million. There's maybe a guy or two you could argue that are going to make over it. I think there's a couple guys that are borderline there, so we could debate that. But I think these are guys that theoretically should be in the single digits, maybe close to 9 or 10 in a couple cases. But outside of that, most of these guys, I think, will be minimum guys or somewhere in between minimum and like half of the non-taxpayer MLE. I'm also looking at guys that I think are projected to be available, largely unrestricted free agents, in a couple cases, team options that are projected to be declined, though technically might not be declined. But most restricted free agents are not going to be available for cheap. That's just the name of the restricted free agency game. It's usually the more expensive guys that you could potentially pry, not the cheaper guys. And then some of the cheaper team options, like you look at, there's several guys where it's like Danish Jenkins or guys like that. If they're getting declined, it's to decline and extend or resign. It's not to decline and hit unrestricted free agency. So I'm trying to keep this realistic here in terms of, and you know, Danish Jenkins is also a guy that would not be making single digit minute millions. I think he'd be making a bit more. So it's got to be guys who are projected to make under $10 million a season and projected to actually be available. Then I think it's guys that need to address at least one and ideally multiple of LA's general roster needs in terms of defense, athleticism, motor, length, and shooting, including from the center spot. This is where I'm a little bit more open to the stretch five idea. I think based on the Lakers' needs for a rim runner, a rebounder, and a rim protector, it's hard to check all those boxes and be a stretch five and not be an all-star or a max guy. So I'm prioritizing those skill sets from the starting center and then looking at, can you find a bench big who can give you that five out look, but it might not be, it's not going to be a starting look. It's probably not going to be a closing look, but it still gives you that look. And basically like a better version of what Maxi Kleber gave the Lakers or like was supposed to give the Lakers. Can you find that from a second or third center? Then ideally players with the upside to outperform their contract. So I think several of these guys, depending on the contract, could end up being real bargains and values, or even in a minimum context, some of these veterans, I think depending on if they get squeezed, could be valuable pieces. Then players who complement the players projected to be on the roster. So right now, Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves, I think the Lakers are going to re-sign Jackson Hayes. So if it's a big man, someone who can contrast Jackson Hayes a bit. And then the rest of the group, I'm not sure, right? Like Vanderbilt, Laravia, Connect are currently on the roster, but I think any of those guys could be traded in a potential salary cutting move. So I don't think the Lakers are going to be building the roster around those three guys or their skill sets. Then potentially guys who could function as cheap replacements or cheaper replacements to some more expensive free agents. So looking at a Rui or a Marcus or a Luke, is there a guy that does what that guy does at 70% of the level, 80% of the level, but is going to maybe be like a minimum guy and you can still have that skill set, albeit at a lower level, but for a much cheaper price. And you're paying that guy $2.5 million or $3 million versus, you know, all three of these guys could theoretically be double-digit million guys. I think Luke is more borderline and probably right under that. And then ideally, the player is under 30 years old, though there are some exceptions based on their specific skill sets. So I once I pull up the targets here, I have certain guys starred for my favorite targets, and then I have certain guys starred for being 30 years old or older. So let's just get into the targets.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
General breakdown here between bigs, wings, and guards. Some of these guards, you could argue, like Shamit or Keon Ellis, are arguably small wings, but you could also classify them as guards. Bruce Brown, similarly, like he plays this, like he's almost a forward sometimes defensively for them, but like the backup point guard offensively. Josh Minot, you could classify as a big, or you could classify as a big wing. So, you know, I'm classifying these in general positional archetypes, but obviously several of these guys can play multiple positions. And like Spencer Jones could technically be, you know, a 4.5 or something if you really wanted to, you know, go a bit smaller. So tried to keep it in like the general buckets, but here's my list. So start with the bigs. I think Mamu is one of the guys to me that is borderline here. I could see Mamu having a market closer to the $10 million range, depending on the team and the situation. I think he's one of the best backup bigs in the league. And you know, it was floated recently that he could be the Lakers' answer at center, which I vehemently disagree with, but he could be the answer in the form of a three-man committee. So if the Lakers are going with the committee approach, I think Mamu is an interesting option, where to me, he's a better player overall than Jackson. And if you have a situation where you have a big on, you know, if you have the Robert Williams or Mitchell Robinson making 12 to 14, you have Jackson making 5 or 6, and then you have Mamu making 8 to 10, you are patching the center position together with a variety of skill sets there. So you have the lob threat, rebounding, rim protecting starter, albeit an injury prone player who is more of a backup. You have Jackson as that high level athlete, rim runner with the proof of concept with Luka and like just the great chemistry. And then you have Mamu as this skilled stretch big who could also function as a passing hub with the second unit, depending on the configuration. So I really like him. Now he's got a player option, but I think it's like under $3 million. So I'd be pretty surprised if he does not opt out and get a raise off that. I would not be surprised if he stays in Toronto, right? Like they could really use him, but he's someone to me, like the clear downsides with him are he's not the best rebounder and he's not a good rim protector or just overall defensive player. Like some of his defensive metrics are actually positive, but I think if you watch film on him, he's got some mobility there and he's got the strength, but he's not a classic rim protector or defensive anchor. So there's a real limitation there that I think in the context of the Lakers roster would be a limiting factor in terms of, I don't think he's a guy you'd ideally want to start even in a pinch, or a guy you necessarily want to close with unless it's a particular matchup. But he is someone that I really like, and depending on the price and depending on the context of the Lakers center build, I would be interested in. Then we got to Marvin Bagley III, who this is one of the guys who's going to break my, like, don't necessarily be that second, third, fourth, fifth chance on a former lottery guy. But I think Marvin Bagley had a hell of a season for the Mavericks this past season. And, you know, the last couple of years has really leveled up quietly. And to me, the offensive versatility that he has as a guy who now can pretty consistently hit threes. I think he shot like 46% on threes, relatively low volume, but an efficient three-point shooter, but also a guy who can pump fake and drive to the rim. He's got the athleticism to navigate the paint and like Euro step or just get past guys. He has a really nice floater game. He's a lob threat. He can catch the ball in a mismatch and go up for a hook or get a putback and put back dunk, put back layup, draw fouls. Like I think he's got the offensive game to warrant this. And he's someone that might be, I mean, I think he should be above a minimum contract, but just based on the market, he might be a minimum contract. I think he should be somewhere in that $6 to $8 million range, probably, just looking at the reality of the market and how, if like Jordan Goodwin's getting six and just some of the way the contracts have played out for the guys under $15 million, it does feel like a lot of these guys are going to get squeezed. So maybe he ends up being a minimum or like a slightly above the minimum, but I really like him. Drawbacks with him, he's a solid rebounder, but he's not a great rebounder. And while he's a solid shot blocker as well, some of the rim protection stuff and just overall defensive awareness and effectiveness isn't quite where you want it. But again, in a, like, I think he would hold up better in certain matchups than Jackson Hayes would. You know, he's stronger than Jackson, and he's a much more skilled offensive player than Jackson with the three-point range. I think he's improved as a passer, the ball handling, and I think he could score at all three levels. So he, to me, is more of an, like, these first two are more offensive-minded, but if it's in a three-man committee, I'm okay with, like, assuming Jackson's one of the guys, and then you go more defensive with the center or, you know, the starter. That's where Mamu and Bagley, I'm a little bit more open to prioritizing the stretch big, the more skilled big on a certain contract in a certain construct. But Bagley, I think, is a guy who's being slept on by a lot of people who I would really like in a three big build. Then we get to Kenrich Williams, which this one I should have here that it's a, you know, he's got the team option with OKC, but it's widely assumed that they're going to decline that because of the second apron constraints. So if he's someone that, like, if he hits the open market, I would really be interested in him as a small ball big. And we saw that at times for them against both the Lakers and the Spurs. Like, he was more on the fringes of the rotation just because of how deep OKC is, but he's a switchable defender. I think he guards up fairly well, and he's also a solid three-point shooter. So he, to me, different type of big than basically everyone else on this list, but he does, to me, check the box of, if you want that small ball look, if you want to have a switchable front line, he's someone that could slide in there. And that's more of a specific big, so I don't even know if I'd consider him as part of like a three-man center committee. I'd almost view him as somewhere between a four and a five. And like, you could go with three bigs and then have him as just like the fourth big, but who can also play the four depending on the lineup. But so the guys with the yellow stars, to be clear, are my favorite targets or guys I would really prioritize depending on the price. The guys with the red stars are 30 plus years old, or some of these guys are 29, but going to be 30 going into the season or during the season. So Kenrich is an older guy. He's 31 years old. And so that would be the one concern here. But if he were willing to accept a minimum, I would sign him in a heartbeat. And I think he'd be a nice small ball option. Then we get to Brook Lopez, who might not be available. He's got about a $9 million team option with the Clippers, but they might be operating as a team with cap space. And if so, I think Lopez still is a solid three-point shooter, and his defensive metrics continue to be elite. If you look at his defensive estimated plus-minus and just on-off stuff, like, he's still one of the best rim protectors and shot blockers in the league. And so he would provide a unique skill set, assuming that he's a minimum guy. I think that would be where I'm comfortable with him. If he was accepting of a minimum contract and a committee approach, him as this unique floor spacer who also is an elite rim protector would be an interesting look off the bench. Now, the downsides are he's 38 years old. He's not the same player he was even a couple years ago, to say nothing of, you know, I think there was a bit of a drop off from this past season to the prior season. There will probably be a drop off from this past season to this next season. So he is aging. He's approaching that 40 mark, but due to his skill and his size and his IQ and just like he still continues to be an effective player who is starting games for the Clippers, right? And playing a certain role for them. I don't think the Lakers would want that, but if that gets declined and he's willing to accept a minimum role or a committee role, I would be interested in Brook Lopez potentially. Then we get to Andre Drummond, obviously one of the best rebounders, one of the best modern rebounders of all time, just still putting up, like he just grabs 8 rebounds in like less than 20 minutes every single game. It's crazy. Has also started to develop a bit of a 3-point shot. I think my downside with Drummond is just he's still pretty limited offensively outside of those catch and shoot situations and putbacks and whatnot, and you know, the occasional post up maybe, but also a bit limited defensively. You know, it's never been a strength of his, but I think as he's, I think he's 33 now, like as he's aged a bit, you know, 32, 33, just not, he's not a plus defender or you know, close to like an average-ish defender. So that would be like, if I'm looking at the guys above him, I think they are all, I mean, there's a reason why he's ranked where he's ranked, but like Lopez is a much better defender. I think Williams is a better defender in the context of a small ball look, and Bagley and Mamu are just at a, like he's much better rebounder than those guys, but they're much more skilled offensively. And while he's now developing that stretch, like I think both those guys are just better shooters and more reliable shooters. So probably lower on Drummond than consensus. Then Jock Landale, I think, is another sleeper who could be a minimum level guy or maybe slightly above that I would potentially like in a 3-man committee. I think looking at what he did with Memphis and Atlanta, just spacing the floor at times, you know, blocking shots and stuff, though he's, I would say overall, probably a slight negative defensively, you know, in a backup big context. Obviously, in a starter context, I think is a bigger negative, but I just think he's a tough player who is competitive, has a certain motor, and is really skilled offensively. This would be another situation where you're looking at a stretch big with a certain amount of pick and pop ability, passing ability, and plays with a certain motor. So he's a little bit lower on the list than some of the other guys, but I think he's interesting. He's also another guy, I think, in that like 31, 32 range. Moussa Cisse, who is a restricted free agent with Dallas. I mean, you could argue from a fit perspective, he could be as high as 3 on this list, right behind Bagley. And maybe even, you could argue maybe Bagley, because of the lob threat ability and the finishing ability inside, is even ahead of Mamu, even if I think Mamu is an overall better player. And Cisse could be right behind him because he checks a lot of the boxes that you would want from a dice roll here, where he's 23. He is his finishing numbers aren't great, but I think he is one of these guys who can be a lob threat. Like in Dallas, they were playing without a point guard for basically the entire season, or, you know, a traditional point guard. So give him the playmaking of Luka and Austin and LeBron, and this guy is going to be eating with wide open lobs and, you know, putbacks. And I think just offensively, he's got the motor, he's got the athleticism. You know, a little bit undersized, I think around 6'10", but sometimes depending on the matchup looks a little smaller, but he's got the athleticism, the motor. He's also, like, his rebounding numbers and his shot blocking numbers are off the charts. Both are elite. And I think there's something there that if he can be developed the right way and is in a situation where he's being spoon fed offensively, I think he could be a really effective bench player. And then Precious Chua, just felt like I had to mention him with the season that he just had. Not like, you know, definitely for me would be behind all of these guys on this list, and is more of just an energy motor big with some switchability and versatility, but did average basically 10 and almost 7 this past season. So there's something there where if we're judging this, all these guys compared to Maxi Kleba, for example, just because he was functionally the Lakers' third big man this season. Like, I think all of these guys are notable upgrades over him. So as long as the Lakers come out of, and look, maybe Mamu is off the table. Maybe Lopez or Williams don't even become available and their teams keep them. Maybe Bagley gets Bag at a number that the Lakers aren't comfortable with, and like so on and so forth. You go down this list and maybe you get toward the bottom. But like, I think getting one of these guys to me as a third or even potentially fourth big would make a ton of sense. I think most of these guys are minimum guys. I think the top three are the only guys I'd probably go slightly above the minimum. I mean, Mamba I'd go over for sure. It just depends on how much, like, you know, the concept of spending a lot on a third big is a little tricky, right? So you'd probably need a discount on Mamu, but with the other guy, like, you know, Bagley, I'd go over a little over the minimum. Kenrich, I think I'd go a little bit over the minimum. Maybe Lopez, depending on, again, the context of everything. But I think most of these guys are minimum guys. And if you get them on minimums, like, I think that's a solid value. In terms of wings, and again, loose definition here, top target by far is Josh Minot, who's 23 years old, I think has shown a ton of potential as this Swiss Army knife who could do a little bit of everything, can play above the rim, has developed into a solid three-point shooter, has some off the dribble game and bounce, and then defensively is a versatile defender. So he's a guy that I think, like, the analytics guys love him, and I'm sure there's a bunch of smart front offices that are going to be targeting him and saw the breakout later in the season with Brooklyn, where he started to actualize his potential more consistently. And there will be teams targeting him. So he's a guy that you might look at his numbers and just be like, oh, it's a minimum guy. But I think there will be some teams that target him above the minimum. But among these guys, I think he's got easily the highest potential. And like he might be the one guy here who has legitimate starter potential in the future. I don't think he's there right now, but I think he could be he could be a top 7 or 8 guy from the jump and then develop into that at some point here over the next couple of years. So I'm pretty high on him. And I think, you know, the more film I've watched on him, the more I've looked at his numbers and just dove into him as a player. Like I just am really high on him and his potential fit. And also, like, I think he's in a sweet spot where he might, like, he could be a minimum player or could be like a little bit above that. And if you can get him for that, I think that's a steal. And like right now, I think of all these guys, him at the minimum or close to it would be my favorite value by far, especially factoring in the age. At 23, I think pretty sure he's the youngest guy on this list. I think he's tied with Cisse for being the youngest player. So that's another element here of he's a guy who I think could help you right now and also grow and continue to develop and grow into being a better player. So really high on Josh Minot. Then Matisse Thybul, one of the best defenders in the NBA, one of the best thieves in the NBA, right? He's a thief. And I think that the big thing with him is obviously just the offense. But to me, with the way that his shot has developed, like, still relatively low volume and still a guy that teams are going to play off of and not really respect. And so, like, he is a net negative offensively, even with his shooting improving. He's not a guy who's a threat to put the ball on the ground. He's not a good passer. He's not a good offensive rebounder. So there are some real offensive limitations with him, but he's one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. And based on his health track record, which has been checkered, he's a guy that I think you could get a decent discount on. So I don't know. I think he's going to get more than the minimum, but you know, when I've done my mock cap sheets, I've had him at somewhere between like 6 to 8 million, 6 to 7 million. So I could see him in that range. And, you know, looking at especially what like Jordan Goodwin just got, I think he could be in that ballpark as well. So yeah, I think he would be someone that, especially if you move off of Vando, he could spiritually play the Vando role of the defensive stopper off the bench, but he's a better shooter and offensive threat than Vando. And I think he's a better defender than Vando at this stage of their respective careers. So I think he's someone that would be a nice fit off the bench in a certain context, especially when a lot of the cap sheets that we go through, it's like the Lakers spend X amount of money on either they're restricted free agent and just don't have that much money left over, or they go over the cap and then they spend part of the non-taxpayer MLE on Marcus or something. It's like Thibault to me is a guy that you could use the room exception on, or you know, part of it. You could use part of the non-taxpayer MLE on, or you could use, if you have like limited cap space remaining, you could probably slot him in there as well. So I think he's someone that there are like multiple ways the Lakers could find a way to slide him into their cap situation. Then Dean Wade, someone who is, you just look at his on-off splits throughout his career. He's been an on-off monster, and just, you know, Cleveland's been better with him on the floor. I think he's a solid defender, especially in more of a bench context. He's a clear plus defender and has some level of versatility. And if you look at actually his numbers in the playoffs, the job that he did against some of the top score, I mean, he was on Brunson and he did statistically a good job against him, but everyone that they were matched up with, Cade Cunningham, like he like held those guys under their playoff typical numbers and just did the best job of anyone on Cleveland. So he, to me, is the limitation with him is the offensive side, where even though he's like an average to slightly above average shooter, he's a pretty low volume guy. He's low usage guy, and he's a borderline offensive liability, if just not an outright offensive liability. So he's someone that, again, maybe some smart teams like analytics, the analytics guys love him. And so, like, my not, he could be the, you know, a sleeper for several teams where he gets, someone pays him $9 million, $10 million, $11 million. Like, he deserves that. I'm not denying that. But he, to me, is another borderline guy where just depends on the market, depends how things play out. But I would be interested in him probably in more of a backup. I view him more as a four than anything. And that's where, again, with modern day fours, they're kind of in between bigs and wings. It really depends on the player. Like, I think John Collins is more of a big, but then a guy like Dean Wade, you could argue, is more of a wing because he's guarding down and he's guarding the Brunsons and the Cades and some of the primary guys. So I like Dean Wade. I think that if the Lakers can't get a guy like Thibault who is a more elevated specialist than Wade, Wade could be someone who, you know, is like, you know, Thibault probably doesn't have as much of a market as Wade, but I think Thibault, for what the Lakers specifically need, checks more of that box. Then one of my favorite guys, who I feel like has not been talked about that much, is Spencer Jones. And he's the rare restricted free agent that I think might be actually gettable because of Denver's cap situation. And if you pay him a certain amount of money, I think you could pry him from Denver. And again, we're still talking single digit millions here, but Spencer Jones, to me, I mean, I don't know if it's just the games he played against the Lakers, though I did see some other performances from him that I thought really stood out. But like, he, to me, is he got a couple game winners hit on him from Luka and Shea, and he had the LinkedIn posts and stuff about it. But I think he's a versatile, multi-positional defender. He's a good shooter. He plays hard. Doesn't have much else to his game offensively outside of the shooting, and is not the level of rebounder you want for a guy his size. But in terms of checking the 3-and-D specific box, I think he's pretty close there as an above average shooter. Shot really well in the playoffs as well, and you know, the small sample size of their series against Minnesota. But he's more of a big wing defender than a guard defender. So there's maybe some overlap with, like, you know, Luka tends to guard those guys. LeBron, like, he's more of a four, I guess, defensively, where maybe he could guard some threes. I actually thought in one of the games against the Lakers, he defended Luka, like that game in Denver, I thought he defended Luka like as reasonably well as a player, like a bench player can. Like, by bench player standards, I was like, okay, like, that was a decent job against Luka. So he's something that I think is interesting, that with Denver's money crunch, everyone's talking about Peyton Watson, what they're going to do with Christian Brown and Cam Johnson. Spencer Jones is the one, to me, that, like, they're going to have to figure that out. But Spencer Jones is an obvious casualty to me that, depending on the price, I would be interested in, and I think would be likely an upgrade over, like, say, Jake LaRavia. Then we get into Gary Payton II. You could argue he's a guard, but I think he functions more. He's similar to Vando in that he functions up a position or two, because like he's almost like a small big in a way. So you're kind of splitting the difference here between him being a big offensively and a guard defensively. But he can guard multiple positions. He still is one of the best bench defenders in the league. And I think his ability to operate out of the short role, the cutting, the playmaking, the shooting's the obvious limitation here. And that's the reason why he's a bench player. That's the reason why he is not going to be making as much money as maybe he should based on the intangibles, the defense, et cetera. He's also 32, 33 now. But I really like Gary Payton. I've been a fan of Gary Payton for a long time. And I think it does feel like he's one of those guys that might just retire in Golden State and like they'll just keep him around indefinitely. And they regretted letting him go to Portland. And so part of me is like, I don't even know how available he is. He might just be re-signing in Golden State year after year. But if he is potentially available, he's a guy that I would be interested in a bench role. Gary Trent Jr. has a player option that it's pretty low. I could see him reject. I think it's around $3 million, $3.5 million, something like that. He's someone that I would be interested in as well. My issue, like, so I guess Gary Trent could be a potential Luke replacement. I had Tim Hardaway Jr. on this list, but the more I thought about it, I was like, this dude was just third in sixth man of the year voting. I don't see him necessarily getting single digit millions. Maybe he does because of the market and because of his defensive limitations, but feels like Tim Hardaway Jr. is a guy who should be in that $10 million range, if not slightly more, just based on the shooting alone. And that was also something that Denver is going to have to figure out. But Gary Trent Jr., I looked at as a potential cheaper Luke alternative, where I would say more of like a scorer than just like a pure bucket getter than Luke, not the same level of shooter as Luke, but is someone that I think could be a cheaper alternative depending on what happens with Luke. And is better defensively than Luke, still not a plus defender and not a plus rebounder. So he does, like, he's primarily out there for his offense and his shooting. But I think based on the Lakers' constraints with some of their own free agents, if they are looking to upgrade the roster and spend money elsewhere, I think Gary Trent is an interesting potential Luke replacement. Then Javonte Green is a guy. It's crazy how old he is. He's 33. And or you're about to be 33, and you just don't. He feels like he's younger because he hasn't been in the league, you know, for that long. But he to me is another one who checks the box of 3-and-D wing, plus 3-point shooter, and another, you know, solid defender, multi positional guy who I think, you know, just is gotten it out the mud. And I like everything about his game. Like, I just like how he plays. I like his mentality. There's a certain amount of athleticism there. And he's obviously fit, you know, solidly in Detroit. So again, we're talking about like back end guys, minimum guys. I think he's a guy in that conversation. And then Ochai Agbaji, a guy who's fallen from grace, a guy who at one point was being, the asking price was a first round pick for him. I don't think he's viewed the same way anymore, but him being an RFA, depending on the contract, I think could be gettable. And I like the athleticism. I like the slashing. I like the defense. The shot has not come along, and overall he is limited offensively. And he's also not, despite the athleticism, maybe not like the rebounder or defensive playmaker to the level that you would want. Definitely not from like a steals and deflections perspective. He does have some solid block numbers, but he's a guy that I would potentially take a gamble on. And really, I mean, if he could shoot, he might be in like the Wade Jones territory, maybe even a little bit higher. Like he might end up being behind like Minot if he could shoot, but that's a big, he cannot. So that's a big deficiency to this game. And looking at the guard.
Hey gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are going to move. We are going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Landry Shamet is another one who to me is borderline coming off of the playoff run that he just had. I think he's someone that might just get squeezed by the market because there are other perimeter guys like a Quentin Grimes or Kelly Oubre or even potentially a Marcus Smart or Luke Kennard, depending on if they test the market or how the Lakers approach their free agency, that could get more money theoretically. Like, I would rather just straight up have Landry than Luke. I think we saw in the playoffs how Landry's game scaled, and there was several big games. I mean, I think about game one against Cleveland and that comeback that they had, but even in the finals, like, there was so many big moments where Landry Shamet was out there and hit big shots. And I think, whereas like Luke had the hot start in the playoffs and progressively was played into a smaller role in both series and was picked on progressively defensively. And just, I think we saw some of the limitations with Luke at the highest level. Landry Shamet, I thought, rose to the occasion and just hit big shot after big shot. There was times they were using him as a point of attack defender and he was holding up fine. Like, that's been one of the biggest developments in his game. I covered him as a rookie and early in his career, and he was not known as a defender. He was a defensive minus, and to see how much he's progressed on that end, like, he's also one of the better high volume shooters in the league. So I think he gives you, he's not like a shutdown defender, but I think he's at least average-ish, if not above average, depending on the matchup, depending on the context. And that, to me, like, I would rather take the downgrade in shooting from Luke to Shamet, which I think is not that much of a downgrade, but is a downgrade with, like, the motor, the defense. I just think he's at the physicality. He's a little bit bigger and stronger than Luke. I just think that's at a different level that I would prioritize that. Now, again, he might be, like, maybe some team throws 3 years, $36 million. We often see guys get the bag after winning a championship. And so this could be a little too pessimistic on Landry's market. And he's the guy who I was the most borderline with in terms of including here. But if he is available, and if even potentially in that $8 to $10 million range, like, if that's the same range for Luke, I would just straight up prefer Landry Shamet. So I think there's a chance he gets over 10. I think there's also a chance he potentially gets squeezed by the market a little bit. It's more like 8-9. Definitely a borderline guy in terms of double-digit millions. And if he is under that or even around it, I'm interested in him and, you know, would view him as an upgrade over Luke. Then Keon Ellis, X's favorite bench wing, 3D wing. I've soured on him a bit. I don't, no longer view him as the same player, and, you know, just seeing him get an opportunity in Cleveland and not really deliver to the degree that you would have wanted. Like, I feel like he's a player who exists more in theory than in reality, but he's got elite finishing numbers. He's got some elite defensive numbers. He's a solid shooter, and he's in that 6'4", 6'5" range. So not quite the defender you want him to be, not quite the offensive player you want him to be. But if he is a minimum guy, or if he's close to a minimum guy, I would still be interested in taking a swing on him. I think there was a report not too long ago that he might be getting double-digit millions. If that's the case, I'm out at that price point. But if he's a minimum guy, if he's like a $6 million guy, I'd be interested. Maybe anything above that, I'm probably out on him. Like, I don't think he should be making more than Jordan Goodwin, despite, in theory, his skill set should be better, or he should be a better player, more effective player than Jordan Goodwin. I don't think that's the case. So if Jordan Goodwin kind of set the market for two-way guards, and if that's the price point for him, I think Ellis should be in a similar range, if not even potially a little bit lower. De'Anthony Melton is another one where he has a player option. I think he's going to decline it. And he's dealt with injuries over the last few years. This past year was put in a role where I think he was asked to do a little bit too much offensively, and it really affected his efficiency. He had a really down year from three, shot 29%. But if you look at his career, I think he's going to bounce back. He's a clear bounce back candidate, in my opinion. And the reason I don't have many guards on here is because I think already looking at the Lakers roster, like, I just don't think they need many guards. And especially in free agency, like, I would maybe be okay with trading for certain players, but I don't think the Lakers need like a Tyus Jones or a Ryan Nemhard or like a Brandon Williams or something like that. Like, I don't think they need these like 6'1", 6'2" table setting point guards. I think they need defense and size and athleticism. So everyone on this list is, with the exception of, I guess, Gary Trent, like 6'4" and above basically. And Gary Payton brings a certain amount of defense. Like, you know, there's a couple defensive liabilities among the bigs, but I wanted guys who play defense at a certain level and then ideally can shoot. And so I'm trying to identify those types of guys on cheaper contracts. But D'Anthony Melton, I think, you know, the upside with him, he could be a potential Marcus replacement, depending on I guess a Marcus replacement, if Marcus is shifted to a bench role. Let me be clear there. Like, I don't think he could step in and start the way that Marcus did and play that Marcus role of just guarding the best perimeter scorer. But if the Lakers reshape the roster and end up getting that two-way wing, end up getting the younger, bigger, more athletic, longer-term wing, and try to shift Marcus to a bench role, if Marcus is making $10 to $12 million and the Lakers just can't afford him, if D'Anthony Melton is making half of that, I think he could be a potential replacement. Now, to be clear, I think the Lakers should prioritize keeping Marcus. You guys who listen to the show know how I feel about Marcus. I think it goes beyond just on the court, off the court. He was a defensive leader, plus minus monster, on off monster. So I'm not advocating necessarily for D'Anthony Melton replacing him. I'm just stating that the Lakers are going to have to make some tough decisions. And if it comes to the point where Marcus has a market that is dictating he's worth X and the Lakers can only afford Y, if they are in a situation where they just have to lose him, D'Anthony Melton would be the type of guy I'd want to go after. Although I think Marcus is a better player. And I also think Marcus's intangibles, like just the leadership, the effect that he had on the group, is at a different level. And then final one, Bruce Brown Jr., who's someone that has tortured the Lakers in the past, someone that the Lakers have been interested in the past, and someone that I think in a certain context could make some, kind of, I guess, similar to the like Marcus replacement in a bench role, not in a starting role. That could be an option, but a unique player with his skill set of being this like backup point guard type who could run the offense, help you get out in transition, but then also defend up a bit. So this is overall, I would say, an underwhelming list. This is not a great free agent class. And there were some names on here that were even more depressing that I had to cut off because I was just like, I'm not going to advocate for this level of guy. Then we can get to the bottom where I just want to state my opinion on these five guys. There's more guys, like if a guy's not on here, I'm either not interested or I don't think they're going to be available, or I don't think they're going to be available for under $10 million. So if whatever names you're seeing that you think should be on here, I think they probably fit one of those three boxes. Not interested for me. Vucevic and Nurkic, I just don't think they're good enough defensively. Like Vucevic offensively, yes, but I also think there's guys where because of their stature, if you sign them, they're probably going to have a certain role. So like, sure, if Vucevic was willing to play a situational backup role, maybe I would slot him somewhere on this list. But I just feel like we saw how the Boston situation got, you know, played out. He got benched in the playoffs, and just I think he's one of the worst rim protectors in the league. And I don't think he's good enough offensively to offset that. So, and I also don't even know if he'd be a minimum big. Like, I think based on his numbers, he's probably going to be above the minimum. So I think based on his likely contract and his defense limitations, I just don't, and like the likely role he would have, that's just a concoction I want to avoid. Similar thing with Yusuf Nurkic. Now, Nurkic, the passing, the rebounding, I think he's a better, or at least statistically a better defender than Vucevic. I think they both are pretty flawed and have their foot speed limitations and rim protection limitations. Like between the two, I might prefer Nurkic. He also has a physical element that I think he leverages his physicality defensively a little bit better than Vucevic, but both guys are kind of the same general thing of like very limited defensively to the point of, I just don't think that they're playable at the highest levels. And look, there's a couple of guys on this big list. You know, if you look at, I think Drummond, Landale, Achiuwa's an undersized big, like the bigs I have are flawed to some degree as well. But I think Vucevic and Nurkic would come in and expect to either be like starting or vying for the primary backup role with Jackson. And I just think that would be a mistake. Of note though, Vucevic does share an agent with Luka, so maybe he's an option. Like the Lakers were reportedly interested in him around the trade deadline. Gabe Vincent, that one is self-explanatory. Kevin Love, growing up, was one of my favorite players. I, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer coming off of the championship and playing in the Olympics, but not
not someone that I just think is like his actually in some ways has gotten like better defensively in like some regards, I feel like throughout his career, at least like the post defense and stuff, but he's basically a power forward playing stretch five. And I just, yeah, I think there's like good shooter, good rebounder, but I would rather go with one of these bigger guys who are all in that 6'11", 7 foot range for the most part. And then Jordan Clarkson had a couple of nice moments in the finals, but I don't think he's a rotation player anymore on a good team. So with all that said, let's get into the Q&A here. Main Squeeze said, do not see a question, but I appreciate the super chat. Next one from Federico Perez. Thank you for the super chat. Give a roll to the young core to see what we got. Certainly. I think the Lakers need to fill out the roster, right? And they're going to probably have somewhere between 2 to 4 minimum players on the team, depending on how the, you know, things shake out. But I would agree that there are certain like young guys that deserve an opportunity. I think specifically Adu and Cameron Carr, but I think the Lakers are going to have a bit of a shakeup here. And if it does, especially if they go under the cap and they use their cap space, you could be in a situation where you add Walker Kessler and you keep LeBron, or you add Walker Kessler and you keep Rui, you add Walker Kessler, you sign Kelly Oubre, or you add Peyton Watson and you sign Robert Williams or Mitchell Robinson, something like that. All of a sudden your cap space is gone. And then you're going to have the room exception, which you'll probably use on Marcus. And then that's it. And you're going to have an incomplete roster, probably depending on if you make any other cost-cutting moves, what happens with DA. You might have like 11, 12 guys. You're going to need another 2 to 3 guys for the minimum. So that's more so where this conversation was grounded in terms of like Minot, I think would be a really interesting fit because he's 23 years old and would fit a longer term timeline. Most of these other guys are veterans, but I also think most of these other guys are better than most of the Lakers' current young core. I think the Lakers' current young core is pretty limited. There's a reason why those guys don't have a lot of trade value. And so I think the Lakers need to hit on some bargains who, for the most part, I don't think check their typical, let's find a former lottery pick or hyped pedigree guy that we want to give. Like, again, Bagley's one of those guys. Pretty sure he's the only one on that list to my, like, I guess Lopez, but Lopez is so deep into his career at this point that I don't really consider him in that group anymore. I think he's elevated to an elder statesman, and Drummond maybe a little bit. He's obviously a former Laker as well, but for the most part, most of these guys are 30 or under, and for the perimeter guys, they're all at least average, if not above, defenders with a, you know, a couple of exceptions. But with all that said, I'm going to wrap here. Appreciate you guys for rocking with me. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. For those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review. I'll be back tomorrow with West tiers heading into free agency. So I'm going to do a quick breakdown of where I have the Lakers in the West and the overall West hierarchy. Then I will follow it up post free agency with an updated list of how I view the rest of the West. So be on the lookout for that. But I will talk to you all tomorrow. Shout out to the chat. Shout out to the Late Night Gang.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.